Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to the Squawker Talker. Today's episode is sponsored by BetBright, home of the 10 million weekly challenge for the duration of the World Cup. My name is Thomas Rooney and once again, I'm joined by Mohammed Butt, the chief writer at Squawker. Mo, how's it going? Loving the World Cup?
World Cup, still going on. It's fantastic. We're in the middle of round 16. Looking good.
Excellent. We've also got Jake Entwistle, the assistant editor at Squawker. Jake, how's it going?
Yep, great to be here in this 2018. What a wonderful year it's turning out to be for World Cup football.
Excellent. We've also got Dean Ryan from BetBright. How's it going, Dean? Good to have you with us again.
Yeah, good to be back on, lads. I mean, you could almost do one of these every day, couldn't you? There's some massive story from the World Cup just dropping every 24 hours. Loving it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sort of every day there's big breaking news, and we'll start off with one of the biggest shocks of the World Cup so far. Spain eliminated by host Russia. Mo, I know you've got a lot to say on Spain.
Let me go.
How big an upset is it compared to, say, the other giant killings so far? And was it deserved? Did Spain deserve to go out?
It's the biggest upset of the World Cup so far. Russia are ranked, 70th? They're not a good team in any way, shape or form. Uruguay showed us that. Spain deserved to go out. They did not deserve to... Yeah, okay, objectively, they were, quote-unquote, the better team. They had more of the ball, more of the chances, blah, 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 blah. But they were just so abject and pitiful. It was like the only I said after the game, Busquets, Iniesta, Alba, and of course Isco didn't disgrace themselves. Everyone else in a Spain shirt was, and Rodrigo, to be fair, but everyone else just made a mockery of themselves. Didn't play well. Piqué was horrible. Good defensively, made a stupid mistake for the penalty when he didn't have to make that mistake. Ramos just didn't defend well at all. Did well to DDT Ignacevic and get the going goal. You know, Carvajal added nothing. Nacho added nothing. Koke...
Nacho added a pretty special goal.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, fair enough. I meant more in the game yesterday, obviously in the tournament.
Yeah.
But it was just, you know, Koke did his job. I mean, Hierro said after the match, we did our job, we improved from the last game, we stopped the transitions. I was like, yeah, Koke stopped transitions, but you didn't attack well at all, mate. You were terrible. It's like Russia, and I get it, Russia 5-4-1. Actual 5-4-1, very disciplined, very defensive. That's not easy to break down, but Spain didn't even try, man. I can't even remember Akinfeev having to make like a save, Akinfeev. Like, if he didn't even make one. Like, he was the hero of the match, deservedly for the shootout, you know, great penalty saves. But was he even good? Did he even do anything in the game? I can't even remember, to be honest. I think the only thing he did was pick the ball out of the back of his net. Mm. It was so poor from Spain, and there's so many reasons why it was poor, but I'll let Jake get a word in before I go off on the reasons why.
Because we need to tame Mo on this rampage.
So yeah, Jake, I mean, they haven't won a World Cup knockout game in Europe since 1934, which I found quite surprising. Yeah. Well, but what did you make of Spain? And they were, you know, they only won one game, didn't they, in the whole tournament? So what did you make of them?
Yeah, if history says anything, they weren't that keen on conquering Europe anyway. They went elsewhere. But as we said, I remember saying, and we were discussing at on the first few podcasts, that Spain were objectively one of the better teams. They kept conceding goals, and that was maybe hiding the fact that they played quite good football. But it turns out the fact that they haven't defended well at all during the tournament... when they didn't attack well, then it led to them being knocked out of the competition. So, yeah, there's plenty to be said. I still think the Lopetegui saga at the beginning of the World Cup has had a huge impact, no matter what anyone wants to say, really. One, because Real Madrid were involved, so that immediately sort of divides the camp or there's always ill feeling between, not the players, but from the outside media view. People were very annoyed with Real Madrid for doing that, and it sort of elevated their status as more than the national team sort of thing. So there's that sort of storyline running. And then you've got the fact that Lopetegui actually was a really good manager and Spain were doing really well under him. I think Hierro, fair play for him for taking that job, and they obviously trusted him to do it. They didn't play, as we said, badly in every game. But I think that lack of being with the squad and being and making the decisions with those players was lacking. You would have felt that Lopetegui maybe brings on Rodrigo slightly earlier, given how impressive he was when he came on. He was probably the only player that really stretched that aging Russian back line. And it's funny as well, because they were playing that five at the back, and given the age of the Russian side, really, that defence is only ever going to stay as a five at the back as well. They weren't planning to play five at the back with some expansive wing-back play. It was defend as you can and lump it up to Dzyuba, who played, despite playing 65 minutes, he won 13 aerial duels, which is the most a single player has won in a game at the tournament. And it was his previous record against Uruguay, where, again, despite actually getting beaten that game, they were pinned back and lumping it up to him. So he is a really underrated, valuable weapon that they've got, because it's all right lumping it up to someone just to get it out. But the fact that he's actually doing stuff with it, and obviously he converted the penalty very nicely. So
we put him in our group stage, as a striker in our group stage team in the tournament. People say, why? And like, well, that's why. Because he's really good at what he does.
Yeah, his value to that Russia side, in terms of, he's not necessarily the most eye-catching striker, but Russia actually got the ball to their striker. Diego Costa was pretty much isolated and for the majority of the match.
Russia won much worse after he went off. Look at it that way. They were actually in it for 65 minutes. He went off and they were just defending after that. So
Spain, disappointing, and there will be questions asked about who stays and who goes in that team as well, because it was very much a blend of some very experienced heads who you think would be sort of willing to, it's not potentially all of their last tournament, but they were very much at the peak of their powers in terms of, this will be the last one where you're at the top of your game. Perhaps you might just be a veteran when it comes, the next one comes around. And then some very exciting young players. Isco was brilliant for the most part, and he started the game really well against Russia, and then sort of lost the impetus. There were some stats going around about forward passes, but that depends on definition, I think. It wasn't 12 forward passes. He definitely did more than that, but the idea is that he wasn't very penetrative with his... He completed 9 dribbles, which is a tournament high in a single game. So he was driving forward, but then that final pass was lacking, and that was much to do with Russia's defending as it was this sort of Spain style and their approach to the game.
I was going to say, just on to Dean, what did you make of Spain's elimination, and are people starting to back Russia? I mean, they're the host nation and things seem to be going their way. What did you make of it in general?
We're not seeing much money for Russia. That's an absolute certainty. I don't think people believe that the fairy tale can continue much longer. But I think on Spain, which is obviously a terrible result for most of the gambling fraternity, because it was such a solid favourite going into that match. I was so disappointed with the way that they went about their business against Russia. I think perhaps even, going ahead early and setting up the game then the way they did. I've never seen so many top quality footballers standing still and just wandering around, sideways passing. I thought it was very disappointing. And I think the tournament as a whole will miss having Spain in it, but for the quality of football that they play, which looks fantastic when it's all going their way, I think they really lacked maybe a fourth gear, a fifth gear certainly, but they didn't seem to have the urgency, and they paid for that. Now, of course, it was well mentioned there that they lost their manager pre-tournament, and that's going to have a massive effect on them, and perhaps there wasn't the togetherness in the squad that there needs to be, but they're gone, and Russia march on. I think did Russia, you guys will know the stats, guys, that they didn't they cover more ground in the first few games than any other team? I mean, are they really, is it all down to host nation exuberance that they're able to do that? Because they've seemed to have been turned inside out.
Yeah, there was the, a lot of, again, the access to those metrics is sort of quite limited, but there were quite a few of outlets that were setting it up. And yeah, they covered the most ground in the group stage, and yeah, they're obviously well drilled, and as we said, it's very much built around lumping it up to someone and then supporting him. So they're putting in great work, and it's the likes of their creative players like Golovin, who we mentioned before. He put in an absolute shift against Spain. He was winning more tackles than he was creating chances, and it shows that sort of everyone, despite them being the lowest ranked team and one of the poorest teams heading into the tournament, they've found some sort of collective effort and a really sort of surprising everyone.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, right? Spain started the tournament, obviously, brilliant performance against Portugal, unlucky with the referee and some bad goalkeeping, right? But they've gotten progressively worse in each game as they've gone on, right? And it's basically the longer they've spent with Fernando Hierro, the worse they've gotten. Like that they basically trained for the Portugal game with Lopetegui, right? And then literally the day before he left, right? So okay, so there's turmoil. Oh, Spain are going to collapse. But then because they'd done no training with Hierro, it was like, yeah, okay, they went into that game in autopilot, and they're brilliant. We're brilliant. We're really good. But then Hierro started training with them, and then they got a bit worse against Iran. And I guarantee you Lopetegui would have sussed Iran out much quicker than Hierro did. And they were basically just bad against Morocco. Ramos in particular has gotten... he was brilliant against Portugal, for instance, right? Like, other players have gone up and down, up and down, up and down. Ramos in particular has marked the decline because he was fantastic against Portugal. And he's obviously one of the biggest Lopetegui, fans, proponents of him. So, and, you know, he was terrible against Morocco, responsible for the goals. And then he was... he wasn't great yesterday, and it's the Spain. They've gotten worse and worse because the idea that a team can manage itself is only really applicable when a team doesn't have a sort of style, when it just sort of plays football, like France team in 2006 when they made it to the final and they were managing themselves because they didn't really have a sort of defined style. It was just like, yeah, give it to Zidane, give it, you know, Makelele defends, Rio defends, give it to Zidane, give it to Henri, they'll figure something out, and that's how they played and that worked for them. Right? I mean, they weren't that fun to watch except against Brazil, but it worked. Spain play a specific style of football. It's a very technical style of football, and a lot of work goes into it. When you have someone coaching who doesn't know what the hell he's doing, and you can't just have players coaching themselves, especially when the one player you need to coach everybody is Xavi, is not there. Like, maybe if Xavi was there, they could have coached themselves. Without him, no. And you can see, this is the thing, Isco, right? Brilliant performance, objectively, against Russia, individually very good, positionally terrible, and actually kind of disrupted the entire flow of the team. Because if you watch the game, watch it back, watch his go highlights, if you can't watch the whole game back, watch how deep he comes to get the ball. Repeatedly comes deep to get the ball. The whole point of that system is that you have Koke and Busquets there to play, and Ramos and PK there, they will play the ball from deep. The whole point of having players that good in that position, passing players that good, is that Isco can stand between the lines of midfield and defence, get the ball there, and then cause problems. He's coming so deep to get the ball, and it's like, it's bad. It's actually bad. It's not urgency or passion. It's just stupid play. It's not intelligent football. David Silva, on the other hand, he didn't play well, but David Silva constantly standing between the lines. He didn't get the ball because Isco kept coming deep and starting attacks himself and not really looking him. But David Silva constantly between the lines, didn't come deep too often because that was his job. And Isco was supposed to do the same thing, stand between the lines. Marco Asensio was supposed to stay wide to the touchline to hold them wide. He kept coming narrow too much. You know, it's this thing with Real Madrid. There's so many Real Madrid players in the squad, right? And everyone's like, oh, it's the Spain of Real Madrid now. And it's showing because these are players who don't understand tactical instructions, who don't understand tactical structure, of how to play a game of football where you're not just freewheeling improvising it because you're such a brilliant player, which is how Real Madrid play football, and fair enough, you know, that works for Real Madrid. But Spain play, I mean, they got to change now, I think, but Spain play more to the, still even now, Spain play more to the Barcelona style of football, the structured style of football. And part of their problem is they only had one winger, Asensio, and they only just brought him in yesterday. Like, they should have been playing Asensio from the start, frankly. After the Portugal game, it should have been clear, okay, we need Asensio in this team. They should have been integrating him throughout Iran and Morocco. They didn't do that, and they suffered for that. They didn't play very well. Brought him in against Russia. He clearly had no idea what he was doing. He was just coming deep, trying to improvise, trying to do something. Didn't really work. The fullbacks, well, Jordi Alba played well, but Nacho and Carvajal didn't really provide the kind of width you'd want from them. And it bogged the team down. The team was slow. Isco was coming deep, getting the ball, and so he had to then look up and he had to break three lines of Russian defence, or two lines of Russian defence, with only David Silva to target, because Isco was meant to be there as the target. Like, Koke was so poor in part because Isco was constantly removing his passing options. Isco kept coming deep. Who's Koke meant to pass through? He's only then got David Silva to pass through, and David Silva's too easily marked. I tweeted before the game, I'm glad they rested Iniesta, because they should be able to beat Russia without Iniesta, because they should have been able to beat... Yeah. They shouldn't have needed Iniesta on to say, Isco, go stand up there, you idiot. What are you doing? But they did. Iniesta came on, and they improved. Positionally, they improved. It wasn't enough, because by then, Russia was so set into their ways. It was like, you're going to need something incredible to do it. But Iniesta came on, Rodrigo came on, Aspas came on, and suddenly there was movement in attack. Suddenly, Iniesta was picking the ball up in proper positions, and he was saying, okay, Isco, move up further forward. Or when Isco was dropping deep to mess around, Iniesta was then standing within the lines, replacing Isco there. So there was actual presence between the lines, and it was destabilising the Russia attack, but they didn't move the ball quick enough, except when Rodrigo got the ball. Sorry, I just remembered Akinfeev did make one save from Rodrigo, didn't he? There you go, that was the one
save. Talking of saves Akinfeev made... He made more in the shootout than David De Gea did in the tournament.
Yeah,
well, I mean, as many in the shootout.
David De Gea is, and this is the big thing, right? And this is the interesting thing with David De Gea, because obviously, yeah, world's best goaler, we all say that, amazing, amazing shot stopper. Clearly, there's a weakness in his game, and that is when his team does not constantly under siege, he actually loses concentration.
Yeah.
Like, does Spain have the ball forever and ever and ever? And he's standing there most of the time just doing nothing.
So what you're saying is that David De Gea is the Spanish Lucas Fabianski.
I mean, look, man, I don't, you know...
That's pretty much what he said, yeah.
look at the facts, man. For Man United, he's constantly having to be worked, right? There's always the threat of counter-attack because United's defence is terrible. So he's constantly having to be on his toes. For Spain, he's spent most of the game as a spectator. He's not really called into action except on a few occasions. And he's not performing miracles like he normally does. And this is, I remember when he first emerged, when he was first came to United and first started playing, I was like, this guy is the new Casillas because of his propensity for miracle saves, right? But he actually is like Casillas Even Casillas, if you look at the Spain 2010 World Cup, Casillas could stand still doing nothing for ages. When Robin burst through one on one, Casillas was like, boom, shut it down. Would David De Gea have made that save? And he's amazing. He's an amazing goalie. But there's a clear weakness in his game, and it plays right into Spain's strength, which is ridiculous. Which is why I think in the future going forward, Iniesta's retired from international football. Mm. Piqué has said before he's not going to play again after the 2018 World Cup. I think Spain need to move to a more Madrid direct wingers kind of football, like the way they used to play before 2006 when they had actual wingers. Playing wide, playing fast and more direct, because frankly, they don't have the players or they don't have the coaches, I should say, to execute a Barcelona-style game plan. And without Iniesta in midfield, and with just Busquets in there, I'm not sure they have the players to do it either. And frankly, with the amount of Real Madrid players in the locker room, they don't have the players who have the tactical intelligence to do it anyway. Isco, it should be good enough to do this, but because he spent basically the years of 21... From the years of 21 to 24, on the bench most of the time, coming off the bench, playing for Real Madrid, not playing regularly, he hasn't developed the tactical intelligence. He's still a world-class footballer because he has that kind of talent. But this guy should be Iniesta level in terms of being a dominating game because he has all those skills, but he doesn't have that because he didn't play enough when he was in his formative years. And this just shows the value, by the way, to any footballer, any young footballer, the value of playing regular football, first-team football for a defined... You know, knowing your role from the ages of 21, 20 to 25, it's very, very important. Sitting on the bench, you don't learn things. And you can still be a good player, but you'll never be like a
top class. Yeah.
Well, not even top class, because Isco is top class. But like you won't, if you could potentially be a legendary player, an all-time player, you won't reach that level if you don't play those key years. You know, if you could be a world-class player, you won't reach that level if you don't. You know, it's really important for Spain. Yeah, Spain, massive, massive disappointment. Absolutely, utterly deserved. They didn't deserve to go through. They shot themselves in the foot, then bent over and shot themselves in the face while they're trying to tend to their foot. And lying on the ground, they just rolled off a cliff. You know, just a disaster after disaster after disaster. You know, all self-inflicted from the Lopetegui thing. Real Madrid messed it up. Then Rubiales messed up even further by sacking Lopetegui. He should have just... I mean, at that point, I understand why he made his decision, but at that point, he should have been like... Yeah, go on then. He should have just let it go. Because Spain would have probably won the World Cup with Lopetegui in charge. Because he would have changed formation instantly. They wouldn't have been playing, wouldn't have come out at halftime playing that formation. Probably wouldn't even got into the game playing that formation. He would have made changes. He's a very smart coach. He adjusts things very well. He makes use of Isco in the forward line because he knows Isco doesn't have the intelligence to play in midfield. He always makes sure there's a midfielder in there. You know, it would have been so different with him and Charles.
I think on that Isco point, it was like Ramos and Isco jointly set the in-game sort of high of most touches in a game. They both had 158, and that speaks to Mo's point just about how Isco was maybe too involved. Obviously, in different teams, you'd want a player of that class to be always on the ball, but there is that problem sometimes that wanting to do too much is sometimes a negative impact.
Yeah.
And we saw that with Spain. It didn't result in anything. The people to come out of this worse, or not the people, the philosophy is Spain had 1,000 passes in that game compared to Russia have only had 1,000 in the tournament. I think they're the exact number. I think that was the stat, 1,029 each. So So that's the thing, is now everyone is will sort of, they've painted every possession team with their brush. It's like, what's the point playing passes? And that's the thing. They didn't play, they played a possession style of play, but with no end product. So there is a massive difference, and playing 1,000 passes can be a very good thing. Look at what Man City did in the Premier League.
See, that what Spain did was tiki-taka. Right? Tiki-taka was invented as a pejorative term, by Javier Clemente. Basically, he was making fun of them, like, oh, my team don't play tiki-taka passes, you know, like tippy-tappy, just passing, yeah. pass. That's what Spain did. That was what Barcelona played, what Spain played in 2010. That's not tiki-taka. That's possession-based football, possession and positional-based football, and it's brilliant. It's incisive. It cuts teams to pieces. What Spain did yesterday was the epitome of tiki-taka. It was just passing, passing, pass, 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 pass. No one's actually making any movement. Everyone's just standing still. No one's making runs. No one's threatening. No one's even trying to make anything happen, except Isco, who was doing it way, way, way too much.
Dean, I was just going to come to you there. Have the guys missed anything on Spain there that you wanted to add, or do you feel like they might have covered it?
I think it's been very well covered. I think what is interesting actually that comes out of that, if you think about the World Cup so far, we've probably seen the end of Messi in a World Cup. We've seen the end of Ronaldo probably in a World Cup stage. Germany looks like their squad and manager perhaps all need a complete shake-up. And now maybe after the Lopetegui issue and Spain not quite having maybe a coach to bring them forward in that same style. Is that four eras all ended at a World Cup? Could be.
You could argue. There's certainly some big names that are going to be, you know, if they are here in 4 years, not anywhere near their best.
I would imagine Messi will still be here in 2020. He doesn't know how to quit. He should do. He should have walked away, but I think he'll
literally quit already. Once.
Yeah, no, but then he came back because he felt so guilty. It's like, oh, I shouldn't have quit. I'm sorry. He'll come
again as well. I sort of think this was their best chance in terms of their like personal ability, but Ronaldo will be there in 4 years, and he will be Miroslav Klose.
He doesn't know how to quit.
So I definitely agree that, there are going to be some massive changes, but you've got to think that some of them will still
some
be
Some will
there,
still be knocking about.
But I mean, it has been a changing of the guard, and there's been a new era coming up.
I say, perfect notes. Go on to the next topic, really, which is, it's just Jake's now. I can just see it in his face. He wants to talk about it. Kylian Mbappe stars as France eliminate Argentina. Jake, he was superb, wasn't he? And how momentous was that performance from the 19-year-old?
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's the classic, what were you doing at 19 that got bandied about? But yeah, that's sort of a coming of age display in the sense that he's always scored goals. In his first team career, he's scored or assisted every 90.8 minutes. and he started playing when he was 16 years old. And he's not even 20 and he's already posting those numbers. He's got 55 goals, 32 assists. And what's quite like 27% of those goals have come in the Champions League and at international level. So again, the only thing that people probably weren't expecting is because, oh, he's scoring all these goals and it's in Ligue 1, which is, I think, is a redundant argument anyway. But this game, he was able to finally prove everything that he has, blistering pace, speed of thought as well as speed of movement, clinical finishing, dribbling ability. He showed he's absolutely the potential to be a complete forward in the sense that he's got the physicality, the athleticism, but his game intelligence for someone that's 19 years old. And this is sort of what Mo was saying in that Isco role. Isco is a talented footballer that's got brilliant stuff on the ball and is a magician with what he does with it. But when you play those games, and Mbappe's now been playing, he's nearly clocked up about 8,000 career minutes at 19 years old. He's developed what to do in that certain times. And at Monaco, he played with Radamel Falcao as one of the best forwards of the modern era, I think. And that sounds like an overstatement in a sense, but in terms of a goal scorer and intelligent of movement, you play with someone like that when you're 18, you learn a lot. And then he's moved into this PSG side where he's been given complete free rein on the right wing to show his pace, show his speed. So yeah, he's this complete package, and Marcus Rojo and Mascherano. Oh, he literally ended Mascherano's international career because they were knocked out and Mascherano retired afterwards.
Basically on the whistle, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I was celebrating his goals. Yeah. Because I'm so pleased for him that he got to show that on the world stage and sort of people were saying everyone already knew he was good, but that doing that at a World Cup, scoring two goals in a knockout game, the first teenager to do that since Pelé is a pretty big statement to make. So looking forward, I hope he kicks on in these knockout stages along with France as well, and it was great. I think Alex Scott as well, who's been brilliant during the World Cup, mm-hmm. said, finally, there's like a new player for the younger generation to get really excited about and have posters on the wall.
Yeah.
And I sort of said, well, I'm 24. I'm 24 and I've got two Mbappe shirts. But speaking of that, I was on the train this morning and I was coming in and there was school children on the bus and one of them had a newspaper, which was brilliant in itself. Yeah. And she was just flicking through the pages and she saw the picture of Mbappe and she just went, Mbappe. So he's this 19-year-old that like was playing with complete freedom and complete exuberance. And making senior professionals look completely silly, he is exciting a new generation of thing, and that you can't sort of underestimate the impact that performance in itself will have. And it was so brilliant to see, and the game itself as well was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I mean my kid's 5 years old. He loves Mbappe. He prefers Dembele, but basically the fact is look at these two, like 21 years old and Dembele, almost 20 Mbappe, he loves them, and it's absolutely correct. They are inspiring a new generation, these young breakout talents. I was supporting Argentina in the game, so my boy started giving me loads of grief about it. He's like, I told you France was gonna win. He was laughing in my face when Mbappe scored. But here's the thing with Mbappe, right? This is Jake mentioned Pele. This was Pele in 58, right? This is yeah, everyone compares Mbappe to Ronaldo, which is weird stylistically because he doesn't dribble with the same sort of trickiness in it and ridiculous like sort of little tiny touches and feints that Ronaldo did. He's like a sort of a hybrid, with Jake and I were discussing this earlier. He's like a hybrid of Henri and Ronaldo in terms of style. But in terms of impact, it was the first time a teenager scored two goals in a match since Pele. But it was Pele in 58. Pele in the group in 58... didn't score in the group stage. Mbappe scored one, but you know, it wasn't that great. Like, he was good, but he wasn't like, oh my God, amazing. Then in the knockout rounds, right, Pele played against Wales, scored one in a 1-0 win. Played against France, scored three in a 5-2 win. Played against Sweden in the final, scored two in a 5-2 win. All goals, second half, right? Mbappe first half was good. Second half, scored two goals in a knockout game. This was his coming out like party, like, I am here. This is going to be my World Cup, you know? And I hope it does get to be, although we'll talk about Franck Deschamps in a minute, but that's the worry I have. But you look at what he did, the way he played against Argentina, just the confidence, the weight, the pace, the pace he played, the control of the pace. Because running that fast is one thing. Controlling the ball when you're running that fast, as Mbappe did, is frankly phenomenal. Like, and the second goal was a great team, a great finish. That's what we know Mbappe can do. The first goal, okay, look, Armani should have saved it, as it wasn't the best shot, but what impressed me so much was the way he had shifted his weight immediately, got the ball out of his feet, and boom, made space. He had like 2 yards to work with, 3 yards. There was no chance there. They've cleared the ball, they've stopped Matuidi's shot, I think it was Matuidi, and it's like, okay, that's it, the chance is gone, he's just going to have to hit it into the crowd, it'll be cleared. He pulled that space out of nowhere. It's like, boom, like pulling out, like Doctor Strange pulling out the dark dimension, just out of, suddenly there's space, and he shoots, and it's lucky they went in, but to create the shot, he fully deserved a lot.
I think that was the Ronaldo-esque part. Yeah. That step over, the absolute speed of that step over, and as you said, he created about a metre of space, but it was like he'd teleported with the ball to that place. It was in a blink of an eye, and it was... That explosiveness that he has is, as a 19-year-old that will still develop, is frightening in itself. And I think for the run to win the penalty as well, which was obviously sort of that happened quite early on, and it was like, well, we could be watching something seriously special here. Again, it's unconfirmed. Always like recorded speeds and stuff is never completely accurate. But from what I've been trying to find out what speed he clocked, because just watching that with the naked eye, you think, well, that's unreal speed.
Like he was shot out of a cannon.
Yeah.
It was
just like, so I'm seeing between like 37 and 38 kilometers an hour, which is like 100 meter sprinter-esque speed. And when you watch him as well, what's funny is you watch players like Raheem Sterling, who have their sort of own running style that's completely catered to dribbling with the ball and being agile and being able to turn. Again, similar to what Mo said there about him being able to dribble as he does whilst running like a 100 meter sprinter is completely inefficient. You shouldn't be able to be good at football if you do that. A lot of fast players aren't great at dribbling because it requires the agility and ball control to be able to manipulate the space once you've got it. The fact that Mbappe can take a huge touch out, but a big enough touch and not too big, it is incredible. All the brilliant dribblers that you see in world football now are diminutive and agile. Eden Hazard is not a quick player, but he's one of the best dribblers in Europe in terms of complete efficiency and volume that he does. Neymar is not fast, he is very skillful. Messi has the fastest 5 yards that you'll probably see in football, but if you put him in a race with Mbappe, like that's why it's funny, is they're both quick, but Mbappe defies what is expected of a good dribbler because he's athletically fast rather than agile.
I mean, yeah, you look at the way Neymar sprints when Neymar does his kick and rush. Neymar's got a very high sprint speed, but you look at when he sprints, what he does is he punts the ball like 50 yards ahead of him and he runs after it, and he's such a good sprinter, he gets there. Mbappe doesn't do that. He keeps the ball within reach every time but still sprints at those high speeds. It's ridiculous. Like Jay says, you shouldn't be able to do that. And, you know, but the only problem I have with France as a whole is that they should have, as much as it was great and Mbappe scored 2 goals and it was fantastic and 4-3, oh my God, so dramatic, they should have won that game like 5-0 in the first half. It was very clear 10 minutes into the game, Argentina are playing really high and they've got a slow defence, and like hitting it long to Mbappe was the right, and then they won the penalty. You're thinking, okay, this is definitely the way. You know, and I know Giroud played well in the end and he deserved to play on. He didn't play badly or anything, and he good assist for the Mbappe second goal. But if I was Deschamps, I would have taken Giroud off immediately, brought in Dembele, and just spent the entire first half smacking long balls behind Argentina's defence for Dembele and Mbappe to get onto. Because the thing with Mbappe is he kept getting to the ball and there was no one to pass to. And if he couldn't go at his own, which he couldn't always go his own, the move just sort of broke down. I think if you have two guys, because Dembele is lightning quick as well, you have two guys hurtling behind the Argentina defence in the first half, they could have honestly ended the game at half time. I know, and in the end it worked out, they won, and it was a fun game, and Argentina came back into it, Messi two assists and whatever, but that's my main worry for me about France going forward, is Deschamps is not a good coach. He doesn't identify the way a game is going. He can make decent adjustments, I guess, in terms of like before games, like he seems to, I mean, he set them out in a 4-3-3. That was a bit better with him pulled Matuidi deeper rather than actually having him left wing. You know, and he understands the importance of, let's say, Olivier Giroud, right? Because, you know, as a balance for the other guys, but he doesn't know how to make adjustments in game. He doesn't know how to judge a game, where the way a game is going and change things. Euro 2016 final was the same thing. France beat their head against that Portugal brick wall for how long before he changed things? I don't think he even changed things. And again, yesterday, they won in the end and it was great, but Argentina are not a good team. Argentina are not a good team. And this is what worries me, because Croatia showed us Argentina are not a good team, right? France should have smashed Argentina out of the park in that first half. They didn't. And they did, and that's what worries me about going forward, because Uruguay are a good team. Uruguay are not going to give Kylian Mbappe all that space to run into. He's going to have to work for his space. Like, now, don't get me wrong, he's good enough, he could still find space in that game, right? And I wouldn't rule against him having an impact in that game. But to me, that's the kind of game where you need to, let's say, start Ousmane Dembele. You need to focus on maybe testing him in the air with Giroud. I mean, because Giroud is probably the only player that you could think of that would actually be able to give Jimenez and Godin a match in the air. And even if they beat him on, let's say, 7 out of 10 crosses, the three out of 10 that he wins could be decisive. Or, at the very least, he'll keep them occupied, and then you can have Mbappe and Dembele coming in to do stuff.
I mean, Dean, were you generally impressed with Mbappe, obviously? And I'm expecting that he's moving up there in the top scorer odds outright. I mean, he's got a couple there, and he's obviously maybe go far.
I don't think he was really one that we picked out at the start of the tournament that we fancied to be top scorer. I don't know if any of the listeners jumped on the idea that he might be golden ball winner along with France win the tournament, because they were highlighted by us at the start of the tournament before a ball was kicked at 50s and 33-1. I mean, you won't get anything like that at the minute. In the top goal scorer market, you'd have to think he's got work out to catch Harry Kane if he gets a few more games, and that will depend on England's progress. But he's 9-1 third favourite. Really only three runners in this event now. Harry Kane's 5-4 to top score. Romelu Lukaku's there at 5-2. And then just behind them on the heels, and very fast pair of heels he has, is Kylian Mbappe at 9-1. Nice. So if Mbappe does get, well, if, you know, France can get past their next game, looks a very tough match as well against a good Uruguayan side. So if they can get past there, you'd imagine he would finish somewhere around Harry Kane's current total of 5. So 9-1, that's the only bit of value in that market for sure, if you're going to go have a go at the top goal scorer.
He'd probably need England to get knocked out, doesn't he, really?
Yeah.
I would say so, yeah.
It's the, if anyone can catch someone, as Dean alluded to, you'd back him to do it. So not just yet. The Uruguay game is sort of like, hold on, no one scores.
To be honest, on that note, we had a listener's question from MZaha41. He's asking for fantasy football, the World Cup.
Yeah.
Should he go for Mbappe or Suarez? What do you think, Jake, ahead of that game?
Oh, that's so tricky because obviously Uruguay are playing incredible football, but Luis Suarez's partner in crime may not be in that game.
Yeah, I would wait for the team news. Wait to see what Cavani... Because if Cavani's playing, go for Suarez. Because Cavani will either find Suarez or Suarez will find Cavani. If Cavani isn't playing and Suarez up there by himself,
yeah,
go for Mbappe.
Yeah, Suarez may play well, but he's so much less likely to have a goal-scoring impact because that duo at the moment are working so well in tandem. But then the negative for Mbappe's side is, as Mo said as well, is Uruguay are not going to be stepping up to the halfway line and thinking, oh, why have we left... Hold on, if we leave this amount of space, will Mbappe make us pay for it? They will. And this is the thing, just one more point about Argentina, and it sort of speaks about Croatia as well, is Croatia were very good in the group stages. I don't think their group was very strong. Denmark played an almost perfect game against them and nearly got away with it. So all this talk for Croatia being sort of the dark horse for the favourites, they've got a brilliant midfield. Yes, I completely agree. I'm not terrified of them.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely have the potential to go far, but I would agree that, and that's why I'm still potentially worried, not worried about France, but I'm not getting too excited. It was a brilliant individual display by Mbappe and there were some great other individual displays, but it was against Argentina. Mm. Croatia looked very good against Argentina. I think it's more Argentina are bad and play to everyone else's strengths.
Pretty much.
Really naively than those teams being brilliant. Even Nigeria should have beaten Argentina if not for an incredible first goal and then a Rojo volley. So I'd sort of... It's so easy to get excited about that game and France and Mbappe, but Uruguay will not let that happen at all. And their little midfield diamond at the moment is going to be...
Oh, yeah.
And this will be a test for Deschamps. How do you make the most of your central midfielders against a midfield like that?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I do think a lot of it rests on Cavani because I think, as we saw in the second half of that... after Cavani went off, basically, in that Portugal game... Without Cavani, I mean, unless he plays the Arrascaeta, if he plays Stuani up there, it's going to be a problem because they're going to retreat too much, I think. With Cavani and Suarez, what they can do is they can play very defensively, but then they can break out, not commit loads of bodies forward, you understand, but they can move in attack and counterattack very well. Without, when it's just Suarez up there, he doesn't have a running mate. If it's Stuani, there's not enough movement and intelligence because, I mean, as we've mentioned 100 million times, Cavani's intelligence is off the scale. Him and Suarez are both very, very smart players in terms of where they move, how they move, and it enables them to basically play to lead a two-man, three-man attack. Like they can send Lachsel up with him or Bentancur. Obviously, the formation is catered for Bentancur to join them, and that's it. And then they can just attack with three or four guys, and then they can make something happen. Without Cavani, that whole thing becomes much more difficult.
I found it absolutely incredible that Suarez or Cavani would sort of semi-clear it and it would end up being a 90-yard pass.
to Suarez or Cavani.
there were more than five occasions where either Suarez or Cavani had a track back, won the ball, and it looked like they were just clearing their lines and then you just see it just fall. And that sort of telepathy or that understanding they have is... they're making a case to be one of the best strike duos in world football because... They're both 31 years old, I think.
Yeah.
So they've played the game for a long time. They know, everyone knows about Suarez's gamesmanship and how he wins games. I think immediately in that Portugal game, he got clattered in the back and held his head.
The boys from Salta, mate, born 3 weeks apart in the same town.
Yeah, I heard that.
Ridiculous.
There's something. There is telepathy there. But
there was some magic in the water in Salta back in 87.
Absolutely.
It's ridiculous. I think. But, you know, if Cavani, we don't know how fit Cavani is. And the thing is, he's the kind of guy he is. He'll play regardless, right? If he can walk, he'll play. But if he's not fully fit, he won't be effective. And that's a problem for Uruguay. But for France, it's going to be... I mean, you can see this one going extra time penalties because, you know, it's like, how are France going to break... France have the talent to break down Uruguay's defence, right? Let's be perfectly clear. They have the best individual talent anywhere in the tournament, probably left in the tournament. They don't have a coach that knows how to use it. Will they figure out, will they accidentally luck their way into it? Who knows? You know, it and you know what? I mean, I think three of the outstanding candidates for the Golden Ball right now are, the three outstanding candidates, sorry, I should say, are Diego Godin, Isco, well, he was and he's gone out now. Diego Godin, Kylian Mbappe and Philippe Coutinho. I don't know what the odds are on those guys, but those for me are the three outstanding players in the tournament so far. And one of them is going to go out, like Godin or Mbappe, in the quarterfinals. So... Let's see who's whose Golden Ball campaign gets impacted.
Just to round off this section, Dean, have you got any golden ball odds sort of in tournament or outright odds for the whole tournament in general?
The golden ball market at the moment is down. Obviously, waiting to see what happens with Brazil later on today. So then it will be back, and I think Mbappe is going to be somewhere right at the top of that list. Given that France, if they do get past the next game, I'd imagine Mbappe would be pretty close to favourite to take that prize. When you look at the outright betting now, obviously France coming alive in the tournament. Some will say very impressive. Some will say not so impressive. But they're 7-2 joint favourites with Brazil now. So 7-2, those two at the top of the market. England, an amazing 11-2 to win the World Cup. So I didn't think we'd be saying that any stage during this run of podcast, but let's hope we continue talking about them. Croatia, who of course just scraped their way through, but now have a very comfortable looking route through to the latter stages, 11-2 as well. 6-1 Belgium, because we all know they've got a very tricky tie if they get past Japan. Then you've got Uruguay at 14s, Colombia 18-1. Now, if they were to beat England, they'd be a big shortener in this market, of course, given the routes to the latter stages. So Colombia at 18s. Russia are there at 20s, and as I said, they're pretty friendless. I know they're on this remarkable run, but there isn't any money for them. I would give the shout out to Croatia at 11-2, because that was another one that BetBright customers were very interested in pre-tournament. We flagged it on here at 33-1. They are getting a good run for their money at the minute, and they're in their 11-2 joint second favourites, which is pretty remarkable.
But here's the thing with Croatia, and this is to go back to what Jake said. They've looked good, right? But they have one mode of play, and it's very well structured. It's fantastic, right? They have these two wingers that play wide. They can swap flanks, play orthodox or play inverted. And they have a great striker, Mandzukic, and they have this amazing midfield that can, with three distinct players who can move the ball forward. It's very, very well structured. It's very good. What Denmark showed yesterday is that if you pin those wingers back, the whole thing falls apart, because then Modric gets a bit desperate and starts pushing forward. Rakitic becomes lost in the shuffle, and Mandzukic, the thing is, if Mandzukic wasn't so Mandzukic-y, which sounds weird, but you know what I mean, he works really hard. He's got an amazing work rate, but
he was dead on his feet as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, but this is the thing, you see, he has an amazing work rate, but if he's isolated from his wingers, that work rate leads to him coming deep to get the ball. He's such an associative player. It sort of is a problem when he's up there by himself, because he doesn't stay up there. He comes deep, and then the whole formation has no depth whatsoever. And then, you know, because your wingers are being pinned back by Denmark, bringing on obviously the Agaharede, I think is his name. Phenomenal performance. The coach last night, Denmark coach, really did a number on Croatia, and that's what concerns me. I guess Russia are going to pack bodies behind the ball. I don't think Russia are going to try and pin Croatia back, so Croatia will make, I would imagine, beat them and make the semis, because they'll have enough in them to create, you know, they'll have more tempo about the game than Spain did, and more to the point, they have range shooting from midfield, they have a better structure. Spain didn't have any structure, and they've got crossing from wide for Mandzukic, which I think could be a problem for them. But if they get to the semis, and then they're going to play, I would assume, I'm just assuming here, England or Colombia. It could, you know, those teams play with a much more aggressive tempo, and England in particular, with their use of wing backs, would really cause Croatia problems, because that would pull the Croatian wingers back to help defend. And then that's going to be interesting to see, because then it's like, what happens with Mandzukic against those three England defenders? And Mandzukic, of course, can be counted in the air by the. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself.
There's certainly a lot to look forward to in the quarterfinals and into the days come on. Okay, next up, we're going to discuss England versus Colombia, the last 16 contest. Jake, I'm going to come to you first here. Just in terms of how England approached this, I think Dele Alli reportedly set to return. Is that, he obviously hasn't played in quite a while in World Cup terms, but is that a massively important return for England?
Yeah, that's good news. I think the players that have come in have not necessarily been bad, but Dele Alli, again, playing that senior football since 16, he brings that sort of heightened football IQ that it could be very valuable in a more high-pressure game. So looking forward to see him come back. I hope he is fit enough. I hope that he was fit for Belgium and just rested rather than still needing that time to recover. His little duo with Jesse Lingard could be really key. Their off-the-ball movement will provide a lot of space and help bring out the Colombian defence, and then hopefully Harry Kane can take advantage of that. But in terms of that game, I think James' injury seems better than Colombia fans feared. Obviously worse for England. But they're going to approach it. Colombia have actually been very and surprisingly efficient in the tournament. they've got the highest percentage of chances created that are big chances. So they don't create many. I think it's 16 chances created in total. But five of those have been deemed big chances where you expect to score, mainly Yerry Mina from 6 yards out heading the ball in. And Juan Quintero himself, who, if James doesn't play, the whole creative responsibility will be on his shoulders. He's actually created the joint most big chances alongside De Bruyne on three, and that was after sort of everyone had played the same game. Someone may have climbed ahead during these knockout stages, but in terms of a level playing field, Quintero is one of the most dangerous creators left in the World Cup, so England had to be careful of that. But I just think the midfield composition England will put out, as I said, Jesse Lingard and Dele Alli coming back in, trying to track those runs that those two make constantly throughout the whole game, will still help pin Colombia further back, and and they will have to rely on their sort of their set piece weaponry, which they've been using well, similar to England, but almost more reliant on it in terms of goals and the amount of goals they've scored. So I'm expecting, I think England should win, and I'm expecting they will win. It's just whether, if Dele Alli plays and he's not fit, then you'll tell straight away. And again, as we've said with managers making bold decisions, if Dele Alli starts and he doesn't look up to it, then you have to be bold enough to say, right, this was too soon, we need this control sooner. And you bring on one of the other midfielders, Delph or Loftus-Cheek, are more of a ball carrier in that midfield to help break past that Colombian midfield.
What type of game are you expecting here? I think Colombia and England are the second and third most clinical teams at the World Cup, but do you think it'd be a cagey affair? Do you think it'd be an open affair?
I think Colombia will sit back a little bit and let England come onto them, because I think you look at what they're going to have on the break with the pace of Cuadrado and Falcao's genius movement. I think one thing you want to do is you want to isolate Falcao against John Stones if you can, and Harry Maguire, because they're great individual defenders. They're having regular seasons. I don't think they've got anything like the experience to deal with Falcao's movement. I mean, we saw John Stones struggling against Falcao's movement in the Champions League two years ago. So I think Falcao is... that's the big worry for England. And of course, keeping track of James. James looks like he's going to be fit. That's a big problem for England, because when he plays, it's not just that he's a World Cup player. I've said this before on the pod. He's a talisman. Colombia all play better when he's there.
Yep.
And Yerry Mina is going to be in the box to help. I mean, I know Jake has a concept, but he's going to help aerially, help cope against England in the air. And that means that Davinson Sanchez can patrol the ground. Look, Colombia are there to be got at. If they play Carlos Sanchez, which I think they might do, they will not play fluidly through midfield. That's the other thing you have to work in England's favour. Carlos Sanchez is a very good destroyer. It's funny, there's two Carlos Sanchez's at the World Cup. They're both basically workhorse destroyers. It's quite pretty funny. Carlos Sanchez, he's a workhorse. He'll help shut down, or try to help shut down Jesse Lingard, Dele Alli. By the way, gambling markets, I bet on Carlos Sanchez getting a yellow card within 20 minutes. I would be chasing Jesse Lingard around the pitch. He's going to foul someone. He'll help them defend well, but then when it comes to Colombia playing with the ball, I think that's going to be a problem for them, because the ball moves so slowly through midfield, even with James and Quintero on the field. But if they get the ball to James and Quintero can do anything, anytime. Like, he could be amazing, he could be rubbish. You can't even predict that guy. He can't even predict himself. James is just pure world class, and I think if he gets on the ball and he starts finding some passing angles, England are going to be in trouble with Falcao's movement, with Quintero running forward, with Cuadrado's pace up against Ashley Young.
It could be trouble for England.
I think Colombia will play on the break. I think that could be trouble for England, but if England play with enough intensity and enough of an intense press, focus your pressing efforts on Carlos Sanchez and Yerry Mina when they get the ball. Yerry Mina's he's a very good defender in terms of aerial power, but he's not good on the ball. He's comfortable stepping up because he's so tall and fast and he can step forward like that, but he's not comfortable on the ball. Press Yerry Mina on the ball. Leave Davinson Sanchez alone, because he's a good ball player. He's just going to play it out sensibly.
Man United, Jose Mourinho targeted Davinson Sanchez though in the Euro Belief final, and he struggled. So although he's improved, he has the capability and the flair and the confidence to succeed and escape the press. But there is definitely precedent there for England to, as Mo said, go really high and stop the ball getting from James early. And Dele gives us that mobility to move forward as well, which is another reason he should be in.
Yeah, with Dele, Jesse and Raheem, those guys have to press hard. They have to press... Is you want to make sure the ball does not get to James, does not get to Quintero, does not even really get to the fullbacks. You want to keep it in the central zones against Davinson Sanchez, and particular Yerry Mina and Carlos Sanchez, because they're not fantastic with the ball. Yerry Mina in particular will panic if he's pressed, unless of course he just strides by them. But gang pressing makes that kind of thing difficult. I think England's success will depend on how well they press high. I don't think England can play a back to front kind of game in this one, because I think the penalty box smarts of Falcao, and if you're letting James and Quintero take shots and crosses and passes into your box, you've already lost. You have to stop the ball getting there. You have to play a front foot game, push Colombia onto the back foot, and then just be mindful of the breaks. You know, and that's not as easy to do as it is to say, but Southgate has always shown himself to be a proactive manager. Dele is back. That's a huge thing. Harry Kane is, at some point, he's going to start playing well. And then that's I don't mean that in a negative way. He scored 5 goals, but he hasn't really played well yet. At some point, he's going to start playing well. And that's going to really be a game changer for England, because he's a very intelligent forward himself. So, you know, I think, and you think 5 goals now, his main rivals for the Golden Boot have all gone out. Maybe that's going to energise him. I mean, Cristiano's gone. You know, who else had 4 goals?
Well, it's Lukaku that's on 4.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's that classic. That in itself is like such a lovely narrative, because those two are the same age, and they're going to be sort of battling the Premier League Golden Boot for probably the next few seasons anyway. Yeah. So that little rivalry is, as we were saying earlier about the passing of the guard, which is maybe too strong, but you're seeing the emergence of 2 24-year-old strikers that are already scoring 20 goals a season in the league. So you've got Belgium's all-time top scorer, and then Harry Kane that is probably
on his way, isn't he?
I think he'll be unhappy if at 24 years old and the goal scoring rate he's got already, I think he'll be unhappy if he finishes his career and he's not better than Wayne Rooney's total.
He has a 69% shot conversion rate for England right now. Goal to game ratio for England right now.
Well, his conversion rate's even better. Yeah. He's had 5 shots on target and scored 5 goals.
So I would be surprised if Harry Kane doesn't break Wayne Rooney's record. Because you figure with pace, he doesn't really play with pace, so he can probably play till he's like 35. And actually, I do think, I've said it before, I think he's the kind of player who, as good as he is now, I think when he becomes like 30, 31, his game intelligence is going to be so off the charts, because he's going to have so much experience. He's going to be like Zlatan and Sheringham were in their 30s, where he's going to get better because his game intelligence is going to have accrued so much experience. His movement's going to become like light speed. He's going to be like, you know, 10 seconds ahead of everyone else.
And for Colombia versus England, Dean, England the favourites, I presume, just?
They are indeed. They're 11-10 to win the game in normal time. The draw is 21-10, and Colombia, the outsiders, at 3-1. There is odds just to qualify, of course. A few punters will have been unstuck over the last couple of days with these games going into extra time. So when you're on the 90-minute market, of course, you've got to start again. To qualify, Colombia is 6-4. England are 2-1 on, so 1-2 England. I'd be very, very confident, even if Rodriguez is fit to play. I can't see him being 100%, and that is a massive plus for this England side, because we've seen Colombia play almost in 2 different styles. Him on form and fire, and they look very, very good. Him just kind of a bit part player or not on the pitch, I think it would be very straightforward for England. So England at 11-10 to win the game in normal time would be where I'd be going on that market, especially the way that Southgate's team starts so fast. The first half could be massively important here. If we go in and perhaps even 1 or 2 goals to the good, which I think is possible for the way England play, then the game could be over early. What you don't want as an England fan, and as someone who's watched many of them in many of the England teams in tournaments, when it starts getting to the latter stages of a game and you're not in front, I think I'd be head in hand stuff.
I was gonna say, and what about England to reach the final? Because we all want to know the odds for that. It's basically happening. So what's going on?
I was going to say, surely that market's being called off, isn't it?
Yeah. England to reach the final, Dean. What is it?
We should stop taking bets on it because it's such a certainty. But you can get 11-4 on England to reach the final. 15-8 favourites now are Croatia. Of course, they're 1 game ahead a few of the other teams in this market. Brazil are there at 2-1. France are 2-1. And England 11-4. Belgium 3s. Russia, remarkably, 5-1 to make the final. I don't think we would have been saying that at the start of the tournament, which is pretty remarkable. And 6-1 Uruguay. 6-1 Colombia are our opponents on Tuesday. And 12-1 bar the rest. There's probably a bit dismissive, is it, of the likes of Sweden and Switzerland and Mexico and Japan? But
the way it's been going, potentially, yeah.
I wouldn't rule out Switzerland. I think they've got a little bit about them. There's something about, they're just kind of nasty.
And they've got a bit more than a little bit. Well,
they're just
20 plus fouls a game.
Yeah, there's something about Switzerland. I feel like they could just upset people just by being a dirty side. Russia, you know what? I mean, if they keep getting their decisions to go their way, like when Piqué and Ramos were both fouled in the same move at the end of that Spain game and they didn't get a penalty. And VAR was like, no penalties. So, you know, if they keep getting decisions like that go their way, then Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't count out Russia either.
But, was Putin spotted at the game?
I mean, no, he was in the VAR booth, wasn't he? He was sitting in the VAR booth, like, no, that's not Benetton.
Exactly, that's where he was.
It's funny, that side of the draw, the last team in that side of the draw to get to the final was actually England.
Which oh, is, no, I saw that this morning.
Which
yeah.
is what is something that you never say, is it?
It's a weird experience. Weirdly, thing, yeah.
Everything is.
Only us in Sweden that have got to a final.
Yeah, I would be amazed. For me, and I'm just guessing here, but the final for me, the finalist from that half of the draw looks like it's going to either be England, Croatia, or Colombia. I think England or Colombia, whoever wins that game, is going to probably, you know, nothing's a certainty, but probably face Croatia semi-final, and then I think. Whoever wins that, basically, I think it's coming from one of those.
Teams. I was gonna say, so we could, just to round up this, I think Dean's got some odds for like name the finalists. So Mo, who would you, if you could pick the final now, who do you think it's going to be?
Ooh.
Pick on the fence.
Uruguay versus England.
Uruguay versus England. Dean, what have we got for that?
20-1, almost the outsider of the whole box. Your England Uruguay is a 20-1 chance to be the final.
Okay, Jake.
I'm going to say. I think Brazil, England.
That's what I was going to go for as well, to be fair. So yeah, Brazil, England final.
That is 11-1. Everyone's fourth got best their... in the market.
It was what? Sorry, I missed the odds there. What was the odds?
11 to 1, fourth best in the market, that one.
We've all got our blinkers on, haven't we?
Well, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, we've beaten Tunisia and Panama.
I just have a feeling about Uruguay, man, the way they're playing with such intelligence. So let's say, what about Uruguay versus Croatia? What would that be?
20-1 as well. You could split your stakes there, England, Uruguay, and Croatia, Uruguay. And as long as Uruguay do the job, you'd be close enough.
Mate, there you go. That's the thing.
I always say it, but I just feel like Brazil are being really sort of underestimated. Obviously, this could sound completely stupid.
You could sound ridiculous in a few hours' time. Yeah.
But I just think they're so solid, and they've got Neymar and Coutinho.
They're just going to sort of. I mean, you can see it, it's more and more. It's falling into place. Everyone's like, oh, it's falling into place for England to come home, but it is just sort of falling into place for Brazil to just sort of like 7 out of 10 their way to the World Cup. Like literally, like they've really solid defensively, as we know, as Jake has gone on about. What is it? The amount of clean sheets they've had under TJ, it's ridiculous. You know, they've got a really solid platform. They don't play the most exciting football because they haven't got their playmakers, their fullbacks are missing, so that's kind of hurt them a lot. But Coutinho is having a phenomenal World Cup. Mm. I think he's probably, I mean, if Brazil win it, he probably will win the Golden Ball. He's having a incredible World Cup so far. And then there's Neymar, who at some point you think is going to go, yeah, you know what, mate, Cristiano's gone, Messi's gone. What the hell am I doing? And then he'll help. I mean, he is the second. This is the thing. He's the second best player in the world. We've all kind of forgotten that because he played for PSG and. No one pays attention.
Well,
to
that's what I mean. All his PSG teammates are doing the work at the moment. Cavani's just had the game of his life. Mbappe's announced himself on the world stage.
Yeah,
I think even Thiago Silva has said Neymar is pretty geared up for this Mexico game because all his PSG teammates are doing well. And it's almost ironic in the sense that when PSG have these big games as a collective, their star players don't shine. But now you realise how good their squad is, and it's going to be, I think people have forgotten that Tuchel's the manager. Next season, they could be really exciting because they're going to have all these players that have come off already, immediately. Even if Cavani's World Cup ends now, he's had a brilliant tournament.
Yeah.
Mbappe has done that and he's 19. He's only going to get better. You've locked down one of the best talents in the world for an X amount of time. If Neymar stays, I know there's a lot of rumours about where he could end up. But if they keep those three, that is... one of the best forward lines you're going to see, and they're all going to be completely confident. So Neymar won't want to finish this tournament as the one that performed the worst.
Yeah, all PSG need now is some fullbacks, and they are set. They will be quite a team to watch.
It's certainly, I mean, hopefully in the next few days, we're kind of trying to predict what's going to happen in this World Cup. It's actually quite difficult, but we've got some 20-1 name the finalists there from Mo, which I'm sure he's going to get on.
Yeah.
And then we're just looking forward to the knockout stages continuing. Okay, we're just going to finish up with a couple of listeners' questions with a bit of transfer talk, worked in because it is the summer after all, the transfer window's open. Jake, got a question for you first. This is from Axel 450-32642, which I believe is his Wi-Fi code. How excited should Arsenal fans be about Lucas Torreira because he's compared him to Kante? And sort of those two, who would you be backing and what do you think Torreira can bring to Arsenal next season?
Well, those midfielders in a World Cup scenario have both been brilliant so far. Torreira obviously didn't start the World Cup. Uruguay moved into that diamond midfield, as we sort of alluded to earlier. He's been sitting at the base of that, and ever since he's come in, they've looked even better. if Arsenal do secure the deal, obviously that's not gone through yet. There's been a lot of reasons, like it's waiting for Uruguay to get knocked out, so they might be waiting until the 15th of July based on Mo's predictions. But he is the exact midfielder that Arsenal have been missing. Arsenal fans sort of are desperate for this midfield destroyer, this large presence in midfield, and he is not that at 5'6". But what he is exactly in the same way that Kante just offers this incredible intelligence of where to be to put out any attack. You saw it against Portugal. Torreira, the amount of 6-yard box clearances he made was incredible. The amount of tackles he made just on the edge of the area. That's exactly what Arsenal fans have wanted. And he's sometimes a bit of a slow distributor with the ball, and that's not his main forte. That's why he's playing at the base with other midfielders around him to sort of have more possession and do more with the ball. But in terms of winning it back and, as I said, a footballing intelligence, at 22 years old, the fact that he's already the master of this role playing at the base of midfield is really, really something to be excited about. I've seen a lot of people say that he's a mix between Kante and Cazorla, which is sort of, that would be the most idealistic description of him in the world. But as silly as it does sound, you shouldn't overlook how good he is technically. Mm. I think, again, being South American, you're sort of automatically blessed with the ability to kick football really well. And he's actually got a brilliant long-range pass on him. He's very agile. Again, you'll see him checking his shoulders every time he receives the ball in midfield. And because he is 5'6", if someone tries to press him, he can spin away easily. Again, he's not going to be as destructive as Cazorla was in terms of what happens after that. But he is a very exciting player. He makes bucket loads of interceptions. He wins a lot of tackles. He gets fouled a lot because of this ability to escape the opposition press. And he also packs a mean long-range free kick. So there are similarities with Kante, and there are also similarities with Cazorla. And a blend of those, despite him not being a mix of them, if that makes sense, is something that Arsenal fans will have been wanting.
I thought, look, Torreira, he's potentially much better than Kante, because Kante is a great destroyer, isn't really a good passer. Torreira is a phenomenal passer. He takes a bit of time with it. He's not a fast passer, but he's got great long-range passing, and he takes the set pieces. He takes Uruguay's corners and free kicks. So the comparison, I think, Torreira should be, and the reason why I thought it was so beautiful that he played so well against Portugal, is Mascherano. Mm. The day Mascherano got ripped to pieces by Mbappe and retired, Torreira emerged as this... As basically, he is Mascherano. He's short, he's a defensive midfielder, he's dogged in the tackle, but he's able to escape the press, he's able to pass. I mean, Mascherano can't do that now because he's 34 years old, but think about how many years he played as a centre-half for Barca, which basically is a defensive midfielder for any other club. Or, you know, when he played in midfield for Argentina, think about 2014, the World Cup, how he played there. That's what Torreira can do, potentially. He's phenomenal. Honestly, I can't believe Arsenal getting him uncontested. He's absolutely magnificent. Like,
I suppose that could change.
I was going to say, maybe that's the problem.
I mean, for example, you look at Man United, right? What Man United need at the base of midfield is Lucas Torreira, right? I know they've signed Fredji, and that's very good, but Torreira destroyed what Matic is, right? Matic wishes he could be as good as Torreira in terms of being able to read the game and but then pass the ball out from the back. And just Torreira he's phenomenal. It's one of those things where I'm just sort of like, wait, Arsenal aside? Are you sure? Because like for years, you're not used to Arsenal making signings like this good. Arsenal find either like some gem at nowhere or some cast off and they make something of him, or they find, you know. This is the kind of signing Arsene Wenger was making like in the late 90s, in the early 2000s. This is a brilliant, brilliant signing. It's a great fit for what they need. It's a great, enormous talent of a player. So he's got great potential. So just to be individually brilliant anyway. And he fits what they need. He fits with their players they already have, because none of them can do what he does. I think it's a dream scenario. And I think it's going to make Arsenal so much better next season, because now they actually have a defensive midfielder. I'm still not sure why they signed Socrates as a centre-back, but with this guy in front of him, I mean, that might even be good to start playing a bit deeper, maybe hang on the break.
I suppose they've got to hope they get over the line now.
Good Lord, because if he keeps playing
we need them to get knocked out, so he can't be playing. I'm an Arsenal fan, that's why I did the wee there. But they need to get knocked out by France. And again, that sort of little narrative thing. If Mascherano got destroyed by Mbappe, there was that one moment where Torreira went shoulder to shoulder with Ronaldo and Ronaldo fell over. So it's this passing of the guard.
Yeah, it really is. That more than any
other
thing.
The new generation.
that more than anything else is the passing of the guard. That Mascherano literally retiring, being run off the pitch into oblivion, and Torreira emerging like shoving Ronaldo out of the World Cup.
That kind of links to our next question, actually, from Nathan Ridley. He's talked about the flops of the tournament. We've mentioned De Gea before, who he mentioned. He also mentioned Lewandowski and Müller.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you guys have got a particular flop you want to briefly...
Manuel Neuer and Jerome Boateng and Mats Hummels and...
just Germany.
Sami Khedira and Toni Kroos and... the entire German team except Josh Kimmich and that's basically it. Just everyone except Josh Kimmich. Flops the World Cup. Comparatively, I mean... Higuain, but I mean, was anyone really expecting
him? He didn't really get the chance.
Like, yeah,
I think Argentina as a team have flopped, but any of their players are set, like, again, as we've said, they were set up to be pretty poor.
Argentina as a team, definitely. Germany as a team, and lots of German players as individuals, in particular Manuel Neuer, I think, because I think he should have had the sense to say, look, mate, take me, but don't play me. Like, I mean, and I know it sounds a lot to ask, but he didn't play football for a year. Like, what the hell? I just thought Lewandowski was a big but Lewandowski as well had no service. Yeah, man. It's a bit harsh. It's like
I think Bayern have come out of this bad. They haven't had a player score yet.
Yeah, Bayern definitely didn't.
That means James Rodriguez is banging in a hat trick against England.
Huddersfield
players have scored more goals than Bayern players at the moment at the World Cup.
Yeah, obviously. Other big flops. I mean, Sergio Ramos, Piqué. Everyone on Spain except Isco and Busquets, really. And, you know, that again, Spain as a team, Spain as individuals, except Isco and Busquets, who I thought played really... And Alba, who had a reasonably good tournament, which was kind of weird. But
Dean, anyone you were particularly disappointed with and would label the flop of the tournament?
The head of the Spanish FA, for sure. And Yogi Love, I think, has to be the absolute flopper of the whole tournament.
Flop, I like it.
Yeah, there's because of the enormity of some of the teams that have gone out, you almost consider them as a flop collectively, don't you?
It's not Tom, like
Tom's lost it.
There's not any one individual that flop of them. Yeah, if you had to pick one person, you would have to either pick Florentino. Well, he's not in the World Cup, is he, Perez? But Yogi Love or Rubiales, I think. If you had to fit one person, even though I think Rubiales maybe was even justified in doing what he did, put in a very tough spot, if you had to pick just one person, it would be one of those two, or Manuel Neuer.
Okay, just before we wrap up, Dean, if just give you the final word in terms of what you expect from the World Cup. Is football coming home in the next few weeks? What are you thinking?
It certainly is coming home. That's the way everyone feels at the moment. And wouldn't it be amazing? And I think it was mentioned off air that Three Lions will be number one single in about 2 weeks' time. And
so you're going to offer markets up? Is that what you mentioned as well?
Well, I mean, we could, but I'd be pretty sure we'd get filled in. I reckon 4-1 on it will be number one if England win the World Cup. If England don't win the World Cup, you can have any price you want and you can use my personal number.
He said that's on air, we got it. Thanks very much again, Dean, for coming in. It's been a pleasure to chat to you again.
All good. Let's enjoy the next few days. Hopefully when we speak again, England are en route to the next game in a tournament, imagine.
Absolutely. And thanks to Mo.
My pleasure. World Cup.
Thanks to Jake, as always.
Yep, brilliant again, thanks.
And we'll speak to you guys next time.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.